Raised Rowdy.
Hello, and welcome to the Raised Rowdy Podcast. I'm Nikki T.
My name is Kurt Ozon.
And for the second time, welcome back, Miss Shelby Ray.
Hello.
Welcome to the new digs. This is not the extra bedroom of a house that I lived in above a recording studio.
I like it. You know what? I liked where you were.
Yeah, it also wasn't
bad. It's called moving on up.
Yeah.
You know, moving out, moving up, literally.
Yeah. Now we're kind of neighbors in the city.
I like it.
Yeah, not bad at all.
I like it. I always like forget I have your location, and I'll be like, "What's Nikki G doing?" Go look at someone else's. I'm like, "Where's he at?"
I think like some of my friends like don't like that. I love the location thing. I think it's so funny.
I love it. It's like having your little Sims. You're just like, "What is everybody doing today?"
Yeah,
or funny. Sometimes I'll check a location before I ask someone if they want to hang out, because I'm like, I don't want to hear them tell me no. So I'm gonna see if they're probably gonna say no, and then maybe ask.
That makes sense. Yeah, I use it when I'm like. Same thing. It's like, is this person available for such things that I would like to ask them about?
You know? Correct.
I have this funny story. Someone in the band, I forget who it was, had Jake's location. This was like years ago when people like when it first came out, but he didn't realize it because we did it on his phone, like when he wasn't looking or whatever. So he had Jake's location, but he didn't know we had his location. And so when we were like without Jake, we'd be like, hey, dude, like, what's up? And then we would just, like, conversationally drop stuff about, like, knowing where he was. And it was, like, freaking him out. But he didn't know that we were just looking at his location.
He's probably like, did I tell them what That's I was funny. Doing and forgot?
We were just fucking with him. It was so fun.
I love it. Oh, that's Jake. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's like, who do you want to have your location?
Honestly, I'd be sharing my location with everybody.
Yeah.
No, not really. That'd be scary. That's probably dangerous. True. I don't actually do that. But I do feel like if I, like all my friends in my close circle have my location.
Yeah.
For me, honestly, I started sharing it at first when it first became a thing for safety reasons. Because like before Savannah was living here, I was home, but I was out by myself on Broadway playing till God knows what time. Right. And I'm like, I'm gonna just share this just in case.
Maybe not the best
Did
idea.
You have like the security guys walk to your car if you like play late?
I'm
like Tootsie's does that.
I played at a bar I won't say, and I asked one time because I don't usually play the later slot as much as I used to because I don't play on Broadway as often as I used to. And I just had a really weird feeling, and I was like, hey, would you mind walking me to my car tonight? He was like, no. And I was like, you won't walk me to my car? And he was like, no, I have to work. And I'm like, it's like 2 a.m. Okay, what? It was weird. I don't know. So I'd never really asked again. But one of the guys I played with, though, they found out that I had walked to the car by myself. And they were like, don't you fucking ever do that. Yeah. If you're down here, you call one of us and we'll walk you. And I was like, okay.
Hell so, yeah. That's so, how it should be. And so I feel like a lot of bars do like walk people to the car, which is good.
I would hope so. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I hear all these horror stories about people like getting jumped in the parking garage and all kind of crazy stuff. And I'm like, that's so scary. So scary. The world's a crazy place.
Well, I'm glad you're not playing Broadway as much and you're doing your own music thing, which is great.
That's right.
Yeah, let's get into some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the reason that we said we should probably do another one of these is because you have the first of the new batch of music.
I know. It's so crazy to even be like, oh, we're here. Like, it's finally happening. Bad. And I still... I'm like, are we sure? Is it actually out? Or are we like still waiting on it to be out? You know, it's crazy to believe we're actually here.
Yeah.
But it's so great. I'm so excited.
No, it's cool. And it's like the reboot, you know, because you had been releasing some songs and then, you know, everything happens, which I'm sure we'll touch on later in the podcast. But and now new producer as well.
Yeah.
So tell us who you're working with.
I'm working with Ilya Tyshinsky. Mm-hmm. I call her my Nashville mom, but she's also my vocal producer. Her name's Kat Gravitt.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great writer. She's got a lot of cuts from like Jake Owen's early stuff and Rascal Flatts. And she is just, I don't know, when I met her, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like we've known each other our whole lives. And she really understood my vision for what I wanted for myself sonically. I feel like I struggled with that a lot, honestly, in my own way, because you don't just wake up one day and know who you are. You don't know whether that's a personal thing or if it's an artistry thing or what your sound is. And I think through, you know, my little forced hiatus, I realized I learned a lot about myself and realize like what I wanted to say and who I wanted to be as an, like to the people and what parts of me. My manager Trevor and I talked a lot about what parts of Shelby wants to be personal that is not Shelby Ray to the people. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a big eye opener for me to just really dig deep and figure out who I was. You know, I try to find the silver lining in every bad thing. And I think that's the biggest takeaway for me is that I learned who I was and I was able to dig deep and really pull a lot of layers back for myself. And so Kat, I met through Trevor's best friend, Grant Gravett. And when we started working together, it was like she just got it. And I was like, this is so awesome to have someone in my corner that understands. And so I visited her in Iowa earlier this year, I think. Yeah. And we were just talking about everything. And I had done a few trial runs with a couple of producers, and they were great. I just don't think we were seeing eye to eye. Like, what they heard for me and what I heard for me were two different things, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think it's about growth, you know? And she was like, Shell, I really think you need to work with Ilya. And I was like, okay. I was like, I trust you. You know, the more we talked about it and the more we just, you know, I showed her some references and we talked about like core values of my artistry that I wanted and sonically. And she was like, I think Ilya's it. And we went in and we recorded Devil first, actually. And then that was like our trial run. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, we're here. This is it. Like, this is what I have been fighting tooth and nail for so many years. And it's like, it was so worth it. It was so worth the wait. So Ilya's great.
That's a hard part too, is like someone can be a great producer, but it might not fit exactly what you're trying to do 100%. Or the sound that you're trying to get.
Yeah. There's a difference between good and what feels good. Mm-hmm. Like there's no right or wrong, but it's what feels right to the artist or the writer or whatever that may be, but
love that.
Yeah.
What are some of the, you were talking about core values of your artistry. What are some of the things like sonically or musically, lyrically that are some of the core values of Shelby Ray?
One of my main things is just authenticity. And another one is storytelling. I feel like sometimes I go into a room and I'm like, hey guys, I want to write like an upbeat, like kind of maybe cheeky or whatever. And it automatically becomes a personality song. And how I'm just like that bitch, you know, and that's Betty cool, Crocker. You know, right. But we've got those. Mm-hmm. And so there's more layers to songwriting, in my opinion, than some people would also agree with. I feel like this is going to sound bad if I say this, but I'm just going to say it. I feel like a lot of people will kind of just throw shit at a wall and hope it sticks. Or if we're in country music, it's now about, you know, how a girl's going to be a pretty face and she doesn't have to be that talented. And it's kind of frustrating only because I wish songwriting was brought back. I mean, storytelling was brought back into songwriting. And that's why recently I don't think I've listened to anything but Stephen Wilson Jr. for like the last 5 months.
That's based. Yeah. Oh,
because yeah. He paints a picture in what he says. And I mean, I've lost my mom and he's lost his dad, but like father son is not about a daughter at all. But when I listen, he has so much, what's the word? I can't think of it.
Explain it.
I'm trying. I'm trying to think of the word. Conviction. He has so much conviction in his lyrics and his emotion that, like, I want to listen to a song and be in the happiest relationship and feel like I'm going through a divorce with three kids. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to feel music. And I do think that a lot of the audience is turning now, because the audience used to just want to have beer showers. You know, we've talked about this. And I do think there's a part of the audience that is now kind of like locking in to the wanting the storytelling back and it not to be so like poppy country writing, which I think is really cool. And it's very exciting for me, you know, especially seeing like Lainey and Ella coming up and just they're like, we're going to do our thing and we're going to be good at it and you guys are going to love it. And I think that's really cool. It's really refreshing too, to see that storytelling is coming back. And it's not just about, I went to the CMA Artist Academy Whiskey Jam thing the other day, and a lot of the people on the panels were talking about how they do care about numbers because they obviously want to sell tickets, but they don't care as much about one single viral moment as they used to, which makes me very excited.
Yeah.
Because it's inevitable. We all have to do it. We have to make art and then have social media presence, you know? But I think it's really refreshing to know that they are looking for more than that, because it's such a vicious cycle with society. I mean, I think everybody feels it. I know I do for sure, of constantly comparing ourselves to what others are doing or what their life looks like through social media, which is smoke and mirrors 90% of the time.
It's a highlight reel.
Yeah, you know, and so I think it's easy to get caught up in, oh, well, I have to post this and I have to post that and I have to do this because this person did it and it blew up when they did it. And I think it's just nice to hear an industry person say, yeah, you do need to do that, but we want to know that you have passion and that it's not just about a viral moment, that you want, that you're passionate about this and that it's a dream that you're chasing that we can help you chase. So I don't even know how I got to that. I think you asked me something else.
Core beliefs.
Core beliefs, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And then you're talking about storytelling.
Yeah, storytelling. So authenticity, storytelling, and just, I don't know. I've been told resilience is something that comes through that is a core value that I didn't realize was, but I definitely think it is, you know, just pushing through because what are you going to do? Cry about it?
Few years.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's no time like the present. You don't know how long you have, you know? So.
True.
No, I think that's very true. And I mean, I think when someone sees you play live, whether it's full band or whether it's acoustic, they can hear your conviction, right?
I hope so. Yeah. That makes me feel good. That's my favorite. My favorite thing is when someone comes up to me after a show, whether it's a round or a hole in the wall or whatever it may be, they're like, oh my gosh, you made me cry. And I'm like, I'm sorry I made you cry, but you're welcome. Because that's one of my favorite things to hear, because I know what I feel like when I attend a concert or when I find an artist that I love. That feeling that I have in my heart and the sadness and the emptiness that I'm going to have the next day, I call it concert depression, of being like, oh, I want to go back to that moment. To know that I can provide that for other people is
it's a huge
everything.
Compliment.
Yeah, yeah, it's everything. Because that's why I do what I do. I do what I do because of how music and live shows impacted me growing up.
Yeah.
So
I had a interesting moment. I went to see Cameron Whitcomb on Sunday. And, you know, now that I am more into this music business thing, I definitely think about shows differently.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple things. One, like, I lost myself some in that show where time goes away. You're not thinking about that. You're just thinking about the music, yeah, which is so powerful. And then also just how he presented the show, I thought about too. So it was like, I mean, you have to have hardship. Like, he talks about his addiction extensively,
mm-hmm,
right? And it's like, but it's not talking about the addiction in a way that's like making you feel bad for him.
Right.
He's making it like, you guys are the reason,
yeah,
that I can get through stuff like this.
Yep.
You know, you guys out there feeding me energy is the reason that I stay sane, right, you know?
Totally.
So it's like, honestly, his show had a lot of similarities to like a Jelly show.
Yeah. When you said that, I was immediately thinking about that.
Or like a Kojo show,
mm-hmm,
you know, just the, yeah, way they present it was super cool.
Absolutely.
And I think that's part of it too. As you get more music and as you can kind of like develop out the story, it's like, how can you present it so that it is uplifting to the people around you?
Totally.
You know,
I think
it's a little harder on a cover show, but
oh, for sure. Yeah. But honestly, I'll be the first one to throw originals into a cover show. I played at Doc's last night, Doc Holidays, and there was a group of people sitting at the bar, and every time I play at Doc's, 9 times out of 10, any show, someone walks up and goes, do you have original music? And I'm like, oh, do I? I'm like, you're not ready for this can you just opened of worms.
Hell,
because
yeah,
we're about to do it. And I ended up playing the last 2 hours of my show doing nothing but originals, because somebody would request a cover and they'd be like, no, get this guy the hell out of here, we want originals. And I'm like, yes. It's just,
yeah,
it's so refreshing, you know? It's, yeah, it's really nice to know that, you know, you can move someone with something you made up.
Yeah.
You know?
It's crazy.
It's so wild.
Just literally make it up out of thin air.
Literally. You're like, so I have this idea, it's probably really bad, and then you write a song and you love it. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I feel like also to what you were saying about you know, like telling a story and then not making someone like feel bad for you. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, for Devil in a Stetson, like, yeah, my dad's a piece of shit, but he made me someone stronger and a bigger person than he'll ever imagine. And that it's crazy to step away from something negative and go, I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
But I think that's something you should do. You know, you should try to find the silver lining, because I'm a firm believer of everything happens for a reason. And, you know, as much as it hurts me to not have my dad in my life and to know that the chances of him ever getting the help he needs and redeeming himself and truly apologizing and meaning it is next to zero. But I'm thankful for the woman it made me, even if it was that early in my life, because I'll be 25 on Monday and I feel like I have a lot of knowledge under my belt and I have so many more years to keep learning. And so it makes me really thankful, honestly, to have been through all the things that I've been through, because it's made me who I am and I'm damn proud of her. So yep. It's crazy to think about. Thanks.
I think that's the whole part of it is like, and that's as you can express that to fans, right?
Yeah, it's
like,
absolutely.
It's like life's a journey. There's ups and there's downs.
Yep.
But how fast can you swing it back up? And then how good does it get from there?
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So it's super cool. I know you got some more songs in the tank too.
Yeah.
So do you guys have like a formal plan on like how many you're dropping or?
You know how that goes. We have a plan, but the chances of that going askew are likely. Yeah. But we recorded 5 songs total, mm-hmm. Devil in a Stetson included. And then we were talking about doing a few other things, but decided that we're going to wait till top of year to do some more releases, just because with the holidays coming up and everything. We're also trying to just let Devil cook a little bit. You know, I want it to be able to have its moment and have its time and its space to do what it's going to do and what the universe is going to, what the song is going to do, you know? And so we're thinking of some singles next year, and then maybe, hopefully, Lord willing, please, I'm begging that we are able to put out an EP sometime before the summer in the summer, of 2026.
Cool.
So I have a lot of songs that I've written, but there's probably like 15 on that list that I'm just like, I need these out. I need the world. I feel really good. You just feel confident about them. You know, sometimes your gut is usually it's pretty right. So. Yeah.
And now you got a producer to help you bring them to life.
Right. And exactly. When I heard the songs, I cried because I was like, wow. I feel like I'd been beating my head against a brick wall trying to get other people to understand what I was trying to do. And when I left the studio, I looked at Trevor and Kat and I said, I've been saying I didn't think it should have been that fucking hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like I was like, why is this so difficult? But it's because the timing wasn't right. And I believe that, you know, things will happen when they're supposed to happen and they're going to not happen because it's not time for it to happen yet. And I keep saying that I think the wait was more than worth it because these songs are everything I could have dreamed of them to be at this point in my life. So I'm very, very excited. Very excited. That. 2026 is my year. I'm speaking it into existence. I said that about 2023, 24, 25, but we're going to keep going until there. Yeah.
No, yeah. I think energy is a big part of it too, right?
Absolutely.
I
mean,
it's like I always talk about what you put into the world, you get back.
100%.
So, and as I struggle with things or as I am happy about things, I always think about that. Like, how can I flip it around and put more positive into the world?
Right.
Because that's how you help people.
Absolutely.
And that's music the same way. You know what I mean? Like, the energy you can get to people comes back to you.
100%. You know? And I also, you know, my mom taught me at a very young age that you never know who's watching. You don't know who's listening, because everybody is, especially when you're in this industry and you're literally every aspect of your life is in the public eye. I mean, what you do is laid bare on a table. You're like, here's my story. And so it's, I don't know, I think it matters what you say and how you treat people and what you put into the universe, like you said, is what's going to come back. So yeah, I agree.
I think so too. And we've had some cool events this year too.
Yeah.
So you get to go on the road with our Rowdy on the Road, our first ever Rowdy on the Road.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. I had the time of my life. It was like a core memory.
I was just there for the first night, and that was pretty electric, but it sounds like it got even more fun.
Do you guys want to explain that to the listeners that have no idea what you guys are talking about?
Probably so.
So we had done an event where we had gotten a slot to open up for Josh Ross at, I guess, like a fair is what you would call it.
Yeah.
So what we did was we had a house band, and then we had three artists that we think are great come with us and then each do like a 30-minute set. So some of it's like getting in front of people. Some of it's like how much work do we have to do? Like I think Connor kind of came out of it with that. Like, man, I need to do some more work on this.
Yeah.
And then some of it's like just getting to see what it looks like. Just like a stage show.
I mean, like as an artist.
As an artist with like stage presence with a band, not your typical like listening room. Everybody's chill, like keeping them locked in on you. And he said, I think he was saying like basically a stage presence. And my takeaway was that I need to write some upbeat songs. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm doing my best right now, but if it was more than these 30 minutes, I've used every party song. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a party song. It just can be a lighthearted, like Love Rich isn't a party song, but people love it because they can tap their toe to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it was really, it's interesting to, because I played live band. I played full band from the time that I was 15, probably 14, to the time that I was like 20 back in South Carolina. And then when I did it again with originals, it was like I got to relearn it, like relearn how to play with a full band. And it's interesting. It's interesting how you don't realize the difference sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, you're covering your favorite songs of all time with the best producers in the world and the best players on these records.
Correct.
You just play the parts on the record. But when it's your music, it's like, how do I make it sound as good as these songs?
Exactly. Yeah. And that was my thing was, I mean, a lot of the times I write and I don't get like a fully produced demo because I don't feel like I typically write with a track person. And so it's just me and a guitar on the work tape. And then I take it to the guys and I'm like, make something up and I'll tell you if I like it. Because there's been no box to put it in. There's no, hey, this is how the song is played, like you're saying, you know. And so it's interesting how much you learn about your music that you didn't realize, even though it's your heart and soul.
And it's hard to convey if you're not, you know, like typically musically literate in the way where you're like able to discuss chord changes or whatever.
Oh, 100%, because I am not that,
right?
For sure.
Yeah, so it's a play something, tell me if I, you know, I'll tell you if I like it or not is one way of doing it.
Yeah. I think that's what we did when you did the Odie's show with us. I told you, I was like, do whatever. If it doesn't sound right, I'll tell you. But I trust you. That's why I asked you guys to play, because I trust y'all. So just come up with something. Mm-hmm. I mean, I give my parameters. Also, the people that I play with tend to know, like, that I'm in that, like, Chris Stapleton, Ashley McBride, like, side of country music. And so I feel like that kind of helps too, like when you sonically, because if I said the Red Clay Strays versus Kelsey Ballerini, you're gonna play probably two different things. I feel like, so it's cool to learn and see things come to life. Like, it's your little baby, so when you see it come to life fully from just an acoustic guitar and a vocal, it's really cool. It's interesting. You learn a lot.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I felt like a rock star that weekend, though. I was, I felt like a rock star for sure. I was like, whoa, I'm going to have to be careful on the road. I'm going to have to sleep. I'm going to have to actually sleep.
Absolutely. And honestly, most of the time, you're not going to have two other artist friends with you, too.
Totally.
This is going to be you and your band, and you're probably going to be doing some of the driving.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
Especially in the early days.
Yeah, these were the, I literally think I texted you and I was like, I can't be getting used to this because this was nice. Matt and Brennan were driving. Mm-hmm. We're not sober in the back seat. We're singing, screaming Disney songs. We were having the time of our life.
Hell yeah. Yeah. And Matt's a great driver too, so.
Except when I was partaking in the elixir. No, Matt wasn't a bad driver. It was not his driving that scared me for my life. Okay.
Was it a New York talk show radio?
Nikki literally texted him before we left and was like, do not play that. Do not do that to them. He was like,
I was like, let everybody say what they want to play and just make everyone have input.
We had a little Spotify jam going on.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
But on one of the last nights, we had partaken in the elixir.
Which is a Delta 9 drink.
Yeah, it was crazy. And we had gotten back in the car and I had been sipping on it, whatever. We get back in the van and we're driving down the road for like 3 hours and I don't feel anything. And I'm like, I'm just going to go ahead and take my gummies so it's hit me by the time so I can go to bed. I sit back down beside Connor and he's like, Shelby, bro. I'm like, what? I'm like, what?
That sounds just like him.
No, literally. Yeah. I'm like, what? And he goes, bro, we got 3 more hours. I said, what did you just say? I said, we've only been in this car for an hour. And he's like, yeah, why? And I was like, no reason. No reason at all. And I just put my hoodie on. I put my headphones in. I put my hood up and I just closed my eyes.
Yeah.
And about 30 minutes later, Connor taps me on my shoulder and he's like, Shelby, bro. And I'm like, I'm too high for this. What? What? And he's like, if you were an animal, what animal would you be? And I was like, Connor. I said, I don't know, a meerkat. And I just closed my eyes and go back to bed. And then, like,
that sounds fun.
30 seconds goes by, and he's like, hey, Shelby, bro. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm fighting for my life over here. What? And he's like, if you could have any superpower, what would it be? I was like, Connor, I love you. I can't do this. I was like, I'm so high right now. I'm scared for my life. I need to go to bed. And then about an hour later, there is ska rock coming through the speakers of the and then it becomes Celtic rock in the back. I am like, am I in heaven? What's going on? It was crazy. And then we got to the Fairfield, which was the best hotel of the whole weekend, and I slept in a fluffy bed and woke up the next day and we were home. I was
Ray's
like
rowdy.
Woo,
there you go.
Lord of mercy. Ride.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was funny though. It was a good time. Definitely a lot of memories that I'll hold on to for a while.
Yeah, we were like, how do we do this?
Right.
Well, they're talking about coming back again, and it's like, okay. But I think, Matt, I think we might have 2 festivals that weekend already.
Yeah.
So it's like, could we just send the kids on the road by themselves?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you might have
not.
To be like
it's
an
like,
adult
it's
version
given
of it.
First week.
Yeah.
I guess it just depends on who you pick. Mm-hmm. You'd have to choose wisely.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, because that might be the thing. It's like, all right, band, you're in charge.
Yeah, seriously.
You know?
Right.
It's an interesting thing. It's just so expensive, the tour.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I think a lot of people don't realize that. Like, anybody that's not in the industry doesn't understand a lot. But listen, if I wasn't in it, I wouldn't want to know the things we got to know. But I feel like they don't understand that the front person, so like if it's me going on the road, I'm walking away in the negative, in the negative.
Yeah.
And the guys probably aren't making as much as they could, should, or want to be making, you know? So I think it's not as easy as just packing up in a van and hitting the road. There's a lot that goes into it, I think, behind the scenes that a lot of people.
Well, buy merch, people.
Literally, yeah.
Buy stickers and koozies and t-shirts and hats and sweaters. Yeah. And
I mean, there's talk about all of that where it's like the raising of the ticket prices and how much more they cost now for shows than they did, heck, even 10 years ago. But there's no money in streaming.
Right.
And then the cost of renting a van is up. And then the cost of gasoline is up. The cost of hotels.
And then paying the guys.
Right.
And
paying your band.
And then rehearsal time.
But, like, band pay hasn't gone up, really.
I know.
In 10 years.
That's what I'm saying. Know? Like, it should. There's so many things that, like, we, as the artists and the musicians, we are on the back burner. And then everything else is in the forefront.
Yeah.
That I think people don't grasp that, which... I don't blame them, but
I mean, if you're any close enough adjacent to it, you get it. It's just as a fan, you don't want them to get that.
That's true.
Because
that's
as a fan, like, you're giving them the moment to get away from their problems.
You're right.
It's not about yours.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Totally. That's
so
a good
like
point.
That's the thing is like at the end of the day, everything, social media, your shows, it's all entertainment, right?
Yeah.
So why do they want to give you their $50 instead of taking their girl to the movie?
Right.
Right?
Or why should they?
Yeah. Or even cheaper, staying at home and ordering pizzas in.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, and watching movies there, or watching YouTube videos of famous people performing.
Done that, for sure.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so it's like,
absolutely.
How are you making it so that that entertainment that you're providing is valuable enough for them?
You know, when I was at the CMA Artist Academy thing, they had a panel of agents up there. Mm. And I don't remember exactly what the question was that someone in the crowd asked one of the panelists, but it was something along the lines of, when do you know it's time to go for an artist? When do you know it's time to sign them? And they said, demand is evidence.
Yeah.
And that just stuck with me. And that has been playing in my brain. Because, like I said, a lot of times you get caught up in the, wow, I've been working really hard and I feel like I should be a little further than I am. But in my case, you know, I get the question a lot of, why haven't you made it? Why aren't you on tour? I don't have any music out, guys.
Yeah.
I've got to prove to these people that they're going to want to invest in Shelby Ray, because they're going to be like, oh, we need to get on that train before it leaves the station. But we're still getting on the train. Like, we're still putting the fuel in, or whatever a train runs on, you know? I guess it depends on the train.
Yeah.
Coal maybe.
Yeah, probably.
No, and I think that's a good point.
Shoveling heavy coal.
I have people.
Shoveling.
Yeah. I have people that ask me all the time. They're like, for advice, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm the right person to even give advice. Yeah,
I say that all the time.
But at the same time,
I appreciate both of your advice. I think it's very, it has a lot of substance. So
yeah. Because we're old.
No, it's not.
It's all these
no.
gray hairs. You don't have as many as me, but
not yet.
For me, the thing, and that's what I talk about. People were like, I want a manager. I'm like, realistically, you don't need a manager till there's something to manage.
Right.
And that means
totally,
you know, like, you have to have shows and revenue, mm-hmm. and you know, a manager gets somewhere between 10% and 20% of your thing. Well, that needs to be enough that it's worth their time, or they need to see it getting there quick.
You have to have enough that they can take that much of it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If there's nothing for them, if there's no chunk of money for them to take a percentage of, then you probably don't need a manager.
Right, exactly. And then it's like booking agent. Well, booking agent's not going to sign up until you're already generating revenue.
Correct.
Right? Demand.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's 100% it. It's like, if you can sell 100 tickets in 3 markets, then maybe there's something to look at there. But if you can't sell any tickets in any markets, there's nothing for them to look
at. Totally.
You know?
I mean, at the end of the day, it's not just about what they believe in. It's a business, and they are investing in someone, and so... Again, I mean, demand is evidence.
Yeah.
And I think that is something I'm going to carry for a long time in the back of my brain.
Makes
sense. Is that you've just got to, you know, you got to build it.
Yeah.
You have to show these people something else. One of the agents said was, you need to make people feel FOMO. They need to be like, wait, what's she doing over there? I want to do that. I want to be a part of what Shelby Ray's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are going to jump on the train and off to the races, you know, I think.
Yep.
And that's where I'm at right now. Everybody's like, well, what are you doing? What do you got going on? What's next? And I'm like, I've got to prove myself right now.
Yeah.
I've got to say, here are my cards. I'm ready to play, and I'm all in. Mm-hmm. Do you want to play?
Well, that's like the thing too, is like someone said, you have to think about social media as an entertainment platform instead of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's not just posting to your friends. It's how can I entertain this audience so that they're going to watch my video instead of the 10,000 other country artists that put out a song in the last 3 weeks.
Yep.
Right. So it's being creative with that. And it's not just music. It's like you said, it's giving them your life.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you you? It's catching them with something clever at the beginning of a video. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's strategy. Like, we had Ben Johnson on the pod, and he talked about, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be one big moment, right?
Yeah.
But they want to see that you're consistent. They want to see that you're willing to pivot if it doesn't work.
Right.
They want to see that you're having strategy, not just doing things.
Yeah.
You know, like, something that's the stuff they're looking for now.
Absolutely. Something I remind myself of too, that I've been saying before, they also mentioned this at the Artist Academy, is the artist has to be the hardest working person in the room.
Yeah.
Period. Like, nobody, if someone is working harder than you are on your own career,
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Yeah. Because that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, the odds of someone coming in and say, well, I want it more than you want it, so I'm going to work harder than you to help you get there. Probably not.
Yeah.
Like, you got to freaking want it. You got to really want it. And you got to show people that you want it and show people that you're willing to work for that. Not just that you do want it, but that you're willing to get there and to do whatever that takes, whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's so important too. It's motivation.
Yeah.
And it's how do you consistently keep motivation, because your motivation as an artist is going to make everyone around you more motivated.
Yep.
You know, it's totally. I think that's a big part of the people that you see that are wildly successful now. Like Ella is wildly motivated.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And she was from the time I met her when she was 21.
Yep.
You know, like she just wanted it and she was just steering towards it and pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Even before she knew what she wanted to sound like, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that.
So that's like, you can, of course, get more motivated as like things go on, but that's something it's hard to teach.
Yeah, for sure.
You have to just be motivated or push, you know?
I feel like the people that are really, really in it don't have a plan B. Like my mom always said, people would say, well, what are you going to do if music doesn't work? What's plan B? And her exact words were, plan B is to make plan A work. There is no plan B. Like, that's, we don't have it. What do you mean? This is what we're going to do. We're going to make it happen.
I didn't have a plan B.
Yeah. And look at you.
I might have had a little plan B, but not really.
Yeah.
I'll teach music or something.
I was just about to say, I said I would go be an elementary school music teacher.
Same.
If all else fails, but.
Teach kids how to play recorder.
That's right. Yeah.
Get that health insurance.
Hot cross buns.
Yeah.
Health insurance is a good thing.
Yeah, no doubt.
Needed.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, man. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. So, like, of course, like, we know everything that's happened. So, let's set the year of. You start releasing original music.
Mm-hmm.
So Call Me Crazy comes out.
Call Me Crazy came out in March of, I can't remember if I was 22 or 23, but I think it was 23. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong.
You're the boss.
I don't know. True. I think it was 23. I think it was March of 23. Let's say it was for shits and gigs. And then that was doing well. And then I met Trevor and he's my manager.
Yep.
And he was like, I think we should work together. And I was really wary of that. I'm like, I don't know, I'm scared you're gonna like ruin my career, you're gonna manipulate me. No, he didn't. He was like, look, I understand. Basically, he didn't say this, but in the kindest way, he said, I know you have trust issues because of your trauma. Let me prove to you that I have your best interest at heart. And so we did like a 6-week like trial period, and we never stopped. We've just been going ever since. And so him and I started just talking about things, and we decided that Betty Crocker was going to be a really good next release to kind of show the people who Shelby Ray is and kind of come out swinging.
Yep.
So Betty Crocker came out in October of 2023. The following month, I just wasn't feeling good. Like I was really... had no energy. I honestly thought I was just depressed, honestly, because I mean, with depression, you go through peaks and valleys, and I just thought I was in a bit of a valley, you know, in a weird space. And then I started having a lot of stomach pain, and I was like, whatever, I've had stomach issues my whole life, no big deal. Well, after Halloween, oh my gosh, after Thanksgiving, I went to the IC, not the IC, I went to the ER, the urgent care. And I was like, hey, like, I don't know what's going on. I'm in a lot of pain. I can't eat. Like, I'm nauseous all the time. I'm throwing up. Like, can we run some tests and see what's going on? And actually, they sent me home. They were like, oh, you're dehydrated and you have gastritis, which is just inflammation of the stomach. And I'm like, well, I could have told you my stomach was inflamed.
Yeah.
But okay, whatever. They send me home. 3 days later, it's gotten worse, like 10 times worse. And Savannah, my fiance, is like, babe, please go to the doctor. She was like, I know you don't want to go. I know you're scared of doctors. I know you hate this. I think you need to go to the ER because I think that urgent care doctor missed something. And so I went, and when I got there, they ran the test, and I had been there for about an hour. And then the doctor comes in and she's like, hey, something's not right. She's like, we're going to run some more tests and we're going to dig deeper. She says, because I'm not sending you home. Something's not sitting right with me. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And then some time passes and she comes back later and she's like, you are in DKA, which is diabetic ketoacidosis. So I'm a type 1 diabetic, as y'all know, mm-hmm. for the listeners. And that means that my blood sugar had been running high. And so there was so much sugar in my body that it started turning into acidic form and started eating my body from the inside out.
Holy shit.
So that's why the keto diet is really bad for you, because it sends you into ketoacidosis and you're burning fat. That's why they're like, watch your kidneys, because my organs were, my body was shutting down. And she was like, we're going to put you in the ICU for a few days until we can get this sorted out. And so they get that sorted out. My blood sugars are back down in level and they send me home. And I'm like, okay, at this point, it's like December. I've canceled my month of December at this point. I've called Trevor and I've been like, hey, I think I need to take a break and I need to figure out what's going on and not just brush this under the rug right now like I tend to do and tell myself everything's fine. I was like, I think this is a bit more serious. And so we did that. And then through December, things just kept getting worse. I was throwing up. I couldn't eat. I mean, I couldn't even keep water down. And we were in and out of the December, November and December are kind of like a fever dream for me. Like I was in so much pain and just so bad in health. It's all kind of a blur. So it's hard to remember exactly what happened when, but I know that in December I was in and out of the ER a lot. I was crying in pain every day in the bed, couldn't get out of bed. Like it was, I had no quality of life. I was so depressed. It was very rough. And I actually remember one of the times, I was in the ICU for a few days. And during that time period, I remember standing in the corner of the room, looking at myself hooked up to machines in the hospital bed. And I was like, this is it. I was like, I'm dying. I was like, I'm not going to live through this. I'm going to die at 23 years old. and then I was just in and out of the ER and doctors were like not giving us answers. We would go to the ER and they would crank me full of morphine and they would come in an hour later and I'd feel great. I'd be high as a kite and they'd be like, hey, how are we feeling? I'm like, I feel good. And they'd send me home. The morphine would wear off and I'd be sobbing an hour later. And it was a vicious cycle. And my sweet, precious angel, Savannah, she is the reason I kept fighting through it all. Like when I couldn't fight anymore, she kept fighting. And I mean, quite frankly, I didn't want to be alive. I didn't care to fight anymore after where I was because it just kept getting worse. And there was like no light at the end of that tunnel. January, I finally like broke through with a gastroenterologist. And he was like, I think you have gastroparesis, which means from your high blood sugars, the nerve endings of your stomach have gotten damaged. So your stomach is not emptying properly. So to go without saying, basically what was in my stomach was in my stomach for like 4 months and wouldn't come out because it was like hardening and not moving because my stomach wasn't able to do the contractions like it needs to do. And so that's why I wasn't able to eat. That's why there was so much pain. And so they did the endoscopy, they did a colonoscopy, they did a bunch of tests, some more tests and more tests and more pokes and more prodding. And finally he was like, you do have gastroparesis, you know, we're going to get you started on this medication, blah, blah, blah. And then by April, I had lost 40 pounds. I weighed 80 pounds soaking wet in April and I'm already very little. So, I mean, I was a bag of bones. I was wearing children's clothes and they were falling off. And I decided that where I was mentally, I needed help. And so I started going to therapy and then I started going to physical therapy as well. And those two combined was a recipe for absolute success. You thought I was going to say disaster. I know. It was a recipe for, it was the best decision I ever made. I got myself out of my depression. I can look at pictures and it's so funny because at my lowest weight, so my worst physical health, the light was back in my eyes, and you can like see that Shelby, like my spirit was back when I go back and look at pictures. So shout out to Forge Physical Therapy in Columbia. Seth Morris is the best ever. He played such a big role in my healing process. We just hit the ground running. I told him, I said, I have a show in March. I'm playing St. Pat's Five Points Festival in Columbia. They asked me to play. I need to be ready to play a show by then. And we made it happen. And from there, it was up. And then also, like, in a little rewinding a little bit, in like February, April, I was starting to get like back pain, and I thought I had a kidney stone. And then they did a scan. They were like, oh, it's not a kidney stone, whatever. I'm like, okay. And then like a month later, I'm crying in the ER again. It's not a kidney stone. It's buildup of stones in both of my kidneys. Oh. So the other one was definitely a stone. So I had to do a lithotripsy, where they go in and they break it up and then basket all the stones out. And from there on, between, I think that was like the final issue. Once the kidney stones were gone, and then I was doing physical therapy and my mental health was better, it was game over. I was like, watch out, bitches. I'm coming for you. I'm back. And so,
yay.
Happy ending. Yeah. And so I came back during that period. I'd moved back to South Carolina to be with family and friends, just cause I wasn't in any state of mind or physical state to be alone. And so I decided I was going to come back in August. And so in July, Savannah threw me like a going away celebrating health party. It ended up being our engagement party. And so she proposed, and yeah, life's been great. Life's been great since June, July of 24. Mm-hmm. So it was a scary period. I mean, I really thought I was going to die. I really didn't think I was going to be here to tell my story. And I'm very, very, very thankful that I am. So yeah, that also plays a part in my story. You know, these bad things did happen to me, but they don't define me.
Right.
They haven't. I mean, do I think about my mom all the time and miss her? Yes. Do I think about my dad often and wish he could be a father? Absolutely, I do. That doesn't consume me, right? You know, and my songs aren't, hey, look at this horrible, sad thing and have pity for me. It's, hey, look at all this crazy shit and look at me now. You can do it too. If I can get through what I went through, you can get through what you're going through. And I think that's just part of the storytelling. You know, it's a big factor for me to be able, I don't know, to lift people up and be like, you can do this.
Yep.
What you're going through doesn't define you right now. And you're going to make it out on the other side. So.
Well, now you're happily engaged.
I know.
And planning a wedding for next year.
Yeah. So
new
excited.
Music out.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
New music out, more on the way.
Doesn't get better. No. I feel like I had all the bad things happen early, so now I can just have a good life.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
I agree.
I'm like, yes, please let that be the case.
I think that's 100% it. And I mean, just getting to see as much as we'd get to see of you, we know you have a special gift and much to give to hopefully so many people here soon.
I hope so. That's the goal.
Absolutely. And we're thankful to have you as part of the family. You have been probably to more Raised Rowdy events with us than anyone else has, including country concert this year, which was
that was so much fun. I just, you guys are my family. I don't know. I have issues with some of my family, and I've always believed that blood doesn't define family. You know, sure. you guys show up for me more than some of my family does. And that doesn't go unnoticed. And I appreciate you guys a lot.
Dude, of course. We appreciate you and everything you do for the world and all the vibes that you put out.
I'm trying. I'm trying.
And I told you this. I texted you this the other day. Like, your guys' wedding website, like, literally made me tear up.
Yeah, go check it out. If you search Savannah and Shelby 2026, The Knot, I think it'll probably come up.
Probably will. But go just, you can see the storytelling in that story too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's so great. I love watching you and Savannah together, and just, not just the chemistry that you guys have together, but just the love that I see in both of your eyes.
Yeah. I don't know why she picked me, but I told her, I said, I hope you never realize, because you ain't going nowhere now. You see this? You ain't going nowhere. You're stuck. You got to deal with it. This is your life, and I hope you love it.
She does.
She's your biggest supporter,
and it's so great. Like when I popped in to see you and Corey play the other night, and just watching her watch you. You know?
That's my favorite thing. People say they love to watch her watch me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I was in a relationship for 5 years, and it was always, I'm never going to move to Nashville for you. It's selfish of you to think I would do that. And I don't want to come sit at your show for 3 hours and listen to you play the same songs, blah, blah, blah. And Savannah's like, I'll drive an hour with you so I can listen to you play for 5 minutes. And it's crazy.
Love it.
I had almost like given up on the fact of having someone who was a super supportive partner in my career, mm-hmm. and just being like, oh, like that's normal. Everybody doesn't, you know, it's not everybody's thing. And now I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? Mm-hmm. I was about to settle for something crazy when this was just waiting on me.
Yep.
And so I'm very, very thankful to have someone who supports me and believes in me as much as she does. I thought I knew love. No, I didn't know love till I met her. For sure.
There's a song there for sure.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, wait, I should write that. Don't take that idea. If you, hey, this is time stamped. Okay. Don't take our idea.
But like I said, it's just been great to get to watch you honestly kind of like grow up.
Yeah.
You know, since the first time we met you and got to see your amazing talent, but just getting to watch you develop as a person has been super cool.
I appreciate that. I love you guys.
We love you too. Well, guys, thanks for listening. Shelby, tell them where they can follow you on social media.
It is Shelby Ray Music on all platforms. Shelby is spelled like the Mustang, R-A-Y-E. Mustang. But, yep.
Well, we're super thankful to have you, not just as people in the Raise Rowdy family, but as friends.
I appreciate that. I love you guys.
All right. Well, cheers, guys. God bless America and God bless Shelby Ray.
Go listen to Devil and Stetson.
Yeah.
Yay.